Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
In the pit lane again, and they are looking at the doing a brake swap. They're doing the brake swap now. This is planned maintenance for these cars over the 24 hours. The brake discs, the rotors are coming off as well. But this is LMP2, so there's no additional long stop as the LMP3s have. So these guys are on the clock, Jeremy, at the moment.
Yeah, they changed the left front brake on the previous stop. They thought it was just a problem with that particular brake, but now they're changing all the other three as well. You're right, John. So it'll now go out with a fresh set of brakes, and it was a good, really good stop there by that Win Auto Sport team. Brand new team in name, at least, but Bobby Golizinski, who's the co-owner of that team with Stephen Thomas, who's also driving in this race. Bobby's been around this sport a long, long time. He was a crew chief back in the IndyCar days. Actually, in where I live, in Rancho Santa Margarita, California, he worked with Cal Wells PPI team, amongst others as well. So hugely experienced, really good guy. Got a really good bunch of people working on that team. Michael Harvey is a team manager. There's a lot of strength and depth in that Win Autosport team.
So we're into the second half of the race. 12 hours and half a minute down. And, you know, nearly home now, except not quite. But that is another one, Nick Damon, of these little goals that people will want to tick off. Get to sunset, get to midnight on Saturday night, get to halfway through the race. And that's the only way I think you can tackle a race like this. If you consider the enormity of doing 700 plus laps around Daytona, it would scramble your brain, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are those very useful both timing and atmospheric things that change. The next one they're going for, obviously, is daylight, which is due in 2.5 hours, 2.75 hours, because that's, you know, that's the next thing. The sun comes up, you can go, right, okay, now we can start looking what we have to do in the remaining 7 or 8 hours. But it's you know, it realistically, though, as we said before, the key point of this meat of the race is just to you know, push without risk, as Lena Gabe would say, because you just don't need to take anything to dive. You don't need to dive bomb a GTE if you're a DPI. You don't need to same with the slower car. So what you've got to do is start turning those consistent laps, and then just see where you are at the point where what you do can make a difference. I.e., when you start thinking that you may well be able to get away without another yellow, then what conditions the car in, what conditions the drivers in for those last 2 or 3 hours when you really begin to push.
Yeah, that's that high noon we talked about in the Porsche Keys to the race. What we love about endurance racing, and if you're with us now as we're heading towards 15 minutes before 4 o'clock in the morning, you probably do as well, is the ebb and flow. Not too very long ago, before we were speaking to Pat Long, Philippe Albuquerque had pulled out a wee bit of a lead. That's disappeared in the last 2 or 3 laps, and Mike Rockenfeller for Ally Cadillac Racing is now staring at the tailpipes and the rear section of that Acura. And Mike Rockenfeller is not one to be backwards in coming forwards, Jeremy Shaw. If he thinks he's got a better car right now, even though there's still half the race going, as they carve their way past the Sun Energy 1 GT3 car, the AMG GT3, if he thinks he's got a better car, he's going to have at least a try at getting past Philippe Albuquerque. He hasn't quite been there yet, but Rocky will give that a go, I reckon.
I completely agree, yes. And, you know, he's really taken to being back in a prototype again. It's been a little while since he joined a prototype car. He was here at Daytona a couple of years ago, but that was with the Corvette team. He's won this race previously in a prototype car, but the last lot of years. His focus has been a DTM in Germany. I mean, they're pretty sophisticated cars, no question about it. But he's got back right back in a prototype here. He's given a really good of account of himself this weekend. You know, that is why they brought somebody like Rocky on board here to join this star-studded lineup in this 48 team. And he is, well, more than holding his own.
And there it is, Jeremy. The 111 Grasser car. They go either side of it down into the International Horseshoe. I thought for a moment that the leader was going to be massively held up. Well, he was, but still managed to find a way through. And Albuquerque is battling now. They've got more traffic right ahead of them. As they're at the far end, that is the 64 Porsche that they're going by at the western end of the infield. And there was an opening for a moment for Rockenfeller. You make a good point, actually, about DTM, because if you strip a DTM car, yes, German touring car, Deutsche Tourenwagen Meisterschaft, it's a touring car in name only, because underneath it looks remarkably similar to an LMP2 chassis. What's hung around it, and the engine is in front of the driver rather than behind, although it's pushed very, very, very back. Wow, very, very impressive by Mike to be right back on the pace. And he thought for a moment, I think, that there was just one opportunity to go around the outside, while the 111 Grasser there, with Ralf van Eyschen behind the wheel, was going to be his friend. Had to deal with the number 4 Chevrolet Corvette as well in all of that. Picked the left-hand side of the road going into the braking area at the International Horseshoe. Do you know what? I think he might have had his nose ahead for a picosecond, but no panic from the leader. Didn't do anything silly, but Albuquerque clearly staking his claim to keep that lead into the second half of the race. Isn't that amazing, Jeremy, how we can be plodding along in the middle of an endurance race and then suddenly it all kicks off again as if someone has fired up the gas to absolutely full power.
Brilliant, isn't it? That was a great move though by both of those two. I mean, heads up driving, you know, maybe there was an opportunity there, so he went for it, then he realised there wasn't, so he had to tuck in behind him. Great racing, yeah, and still, we're not at the halfway point in this race, are we? This is fantastic stuff. Just a tremendous motor race. Magnussen hanging on there in third place, still within 10 seconds. Chase Elliott, he slipped to 25 seconds back in the fourth position, and now it's Juan Pablo Montoya who is chasing after Chase Elliott in the number 60 car. He's got that gap down now, actually down to about a second and a half. So I think within a lap or two, we're going to see Montoya trying to make a move on the reigning NASCAR Sprint Cup champion.
A lot of people on Twitter from around the world very impressed with Chase Elliott. And we'll talk more about his lap times and how he's adapting here. But at the moment, we've got to keep our eyes on the front of the field, past the Ferrari number 63, again into that area. And this is what it's going to be like for the rest of their stints. Around about 20, 22 laps for the DPIs. So these guys have still got about 10, 12, 13 minutes maybe to go. 6 or 7 laps before they'll have to bring their steeds in for some additional VP racing fuel. Through turn 6, which is the transition back onto the speedway, up on the high banks, usual rules of etiquette apply. If you're slow, you steer low, and that allows the faster cars, normally the bigger downforce cars as well, of course, to be able to pick their line and go up over the top. Fascinating stuff at the moment. Join the conversation with us here in the wee small hours, the Night Owls portion of our coverage, very traditional with rooftop rate. Thanks to Chris and the rest of the production team from NASCAR Productions for making sure that we can still see the action out on the circuit and bring it to you
at IMSA Radio, hashtag R24 Radio. Through the tri-oval again, lights flashing from the leader. That's because there's traffic ahead. Pick your line, any line. Now, you see, you've got a prototype in front. Which way is he going to go? It's all very well when it's a GT3 or a GT Le Mans car. Another inside move. You would think, Jeremy, that we were closing in on the last couple of laps, not 11 hours and 50 minutes to go. But this is track position could be important. We never know when the key point, the turning point of a race like this is going to come. It could be now. It could have been 4 hours ago, and we haven't realised the significance of it yet.
Yeah, there's something going on all the way around this racetrack all of the time. It's a tremendous motor race. We've got 49 cars started this race. We've lost a few, but not that many, really. I guess there's four cars out of this race so far, but everybody else is running well. There's a few cars that have had some problems and lost quite a lot of ground, but they're still going to soldier on the best they can and hope to pick up some positions all the way before the end of the race. But the battle at the front is as intense now as it ever has been throughout this race so far.
Well, keep an eye on what's going on in the other categories, but by far the closest battle for position at the moment is for the lead of the race overall. We'll get through the next clock hour and then give you another Mazda in-race update from the other categories. Uh-oh. Audi in problems down on the apron is never a good thing to be. This is one of the GT Daytona cars that has an issue, and that is the Alan Metney NTE Sport Audi. Alan at the wheel of that car. Jeremy and I have seen him an awful lot in the last few years plying his trade and learning his craft in the Porsche Cup, the IMSA Porsche Cup, which is brand new for this year. It becomes a Porsche Carrera Cup North America, moving on to Michelin tyres. And Alan's really done very, very well indeed as a gentleman driver, Jeremy, and he's using that experience, has been using it very well, but I think he's got mechanical issues there, maybe a tyre issue. Looked like he was sitting down at the back, but he's still moving that car. That'll get back to the pit lane, we hope. Has there been a coming together the 11 was off as well, so that was a car that we were keeping our eyes on. That was at turn six going back up onto the high banks, just hearing from race control. And so that was Tristan Nunes in the Wynn Autosport, the Orica. And that car's having an awful few minutes. And that car has made it back to the pits, whereas Alan Metney is just through the bus stop and coming through. Ooh, some of the lights have gone out. Has he got it back to the pit lane? Yes, he has. So at least he's got it back for some kind of service. But I think he's going straight behind the wall here. Nick Damon, yes, he is.
Yep, straight behind the wall, which is no one wants to say, but obviously whatever has been diagnosed, he knows there's no point sticking it on the apron and then having to push it back. This is something that needs the attention of the team and can't be fixed with a few men over the wall, so it's going straight back into the pit area. And you see these mechanics running in front of him, and then he'll pull in and hopefully they'll be able to fix it relatively quickly.
Yeah, not the only one getting remedial work done
He's just gone past Tristan Nunes again. That's Wynn Autosport cars back in there, I noticed, in the pit. So that brake change didn't solve the problem. The car was leading P2 of an hour or so ago.
Yeah, good spot, Nick. They're both behind the wall. I don't think that was a connected incident. It was down at turn number six. Oh, well, say that. And of course, side-by-side contact between those two cars at turn six. Jeremy Shaw, how did you read that one?
Yeah, it looked like the number 11 car turned across and the 42 was already there, didn't it? I don't know. I didn't see long enough before the actual contact to see where they had been relative to that beforehand, because number 42 car certainly was well to the inside of the corner. Was he going slow and trying to let the other guy go past? In which case, why did he push it to the apex of the corner? So I don't know. I'd like to see a bit more of that. I think as we see the number 48 car right on schedule, that 410. So this is another. Actually, just a 20-lap stint. No, number 48 car was last in on lap 388. So this is a 22-lap stint for the number 48 car.
Yeah, Mike Rockenfeller staying in. But did get a new set of tyres, it looks to me. Or did he not? They've got
new boots, John.
New boots, thank you. I can see them sitting behind the ones that came off. If you're used to watching WEC European Racing... don't worry about the burnouts. They are not encouraged, but certainly not discouraged. Not allowed in some other series. What is very much frowned upon, though, is turning wheels while you're up on the hydraulic jacks. That will get you a pit lane penalty. And we've already seen a couple of those handed out. In our Porsche Keys to the Race, we did mention rules. Shea Adam will be with us in a moment. She always reads the rule book, 158 pages, I think. And we're now hearing from Race Control that that incident between Alan Bettany and Tristan Nunes, the 42 and the 11, incident responsibility with the number 42. So that will be a drive-through when that car comes back out of the pit lane.
That's not quite how I see it, but I'm not race control. So.
It's the job I would never want to do at a racetrack, if I'm very honest.
I think what happened there probably is what I was perhaps alluding to, the fact that the 42 car was well to the inside, seemingly allowing the number 11 car to go around the outside. And if you're going to do that, don't get to the apex when the 11 car is turning in.
Correct.
I think that's probably what happened there.
The issue as well is that the GT cars actually are very good in the slower corners. They don't have the downforce, but they have got mechanical grip, so they do actually work rather well in the slower corners. And that may have been just a slight mistake from the drivers. More pit stops. And Chase Elliott is back into the pits. Overshot slightly, but they've still got the fuel probe in there, Nick.
Yep, 20 laps of chase in that last run. I think we also had... Who else was just trundled in behind him? Another piece of paper. It was Juan Pablo Montoya in the 60. He came in after a 21-lap race. Felipe Albuquerque should be in next time. He's done 21 laps already on this stint. I think it's his fourth stint, so probably he'll be getting out of the car and handing over to a teammate as they continue to turn around. Just going on your point about the GT Le Mans, GT Le Mans will pull away from a 50-mile-an-hour corner quicker than a DPI for the first 50 metres or so. They've got superb traction compared to the cars which rely on downforce.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true indeed. That can cause problems at racetracks all around the world. Philippe Albuquerque into the pit lane as well. In the number 10, the black and blue Acura. And that looked to me like that was that just VP Racing fuel as well?
Hard to tell that one because we came to a difficult angle where they're so quick getting the tyres on. They do seem to be changing tyres every single time. So my guess is in the DPIs. The real question is whether they do a driver change. Because if not, Albuquerque, I think this is going to be his fifth, isn't it, for Albuquerque, if he stays on.
I will tell you as he goes.
Yeah, he's done four. He's done four. This would, if he stays in, it'd be his fifth. We didn't have that view of exactly what was going on around the side of the car during the start and stop.
Winwood Racing, number 57 in, and that car is taking fuel as well as we welcome into the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, Shea Adam. Morning, Shea.
Hello.
Good to have your company. I'll ask you the question. It was Ricky Taylor, by the way, who took out the Acura. So Albuquerque did get out after the four stints of about 40 minutes. or thereabouts. And also in the pit lane, number 21, Daniel Serra, AF Corsa Ferrari. Serra brought that in. I'll ask you the same question, Shay, as we come up to another clock hour at near as you know what, 4 o'clock in the morning. What's been catching your eyes then in the last couple of hours, how the race is developing?
Watching drive time is what I've been interested in, and to be honest, mildly frustrated because the most recent stint analysis that has been posted online does not have comprehensive drive times associated with it yet. So when that does, I will let you know who has completed their drive time. But yeah, trying to figure out in the AM classes, who are we not going to see again for the remainder of the race? Who do we need to see a lot more of? And then, of course, as far as championship points are concerned, we did have more Michelin Endurance Cup points handed out. I want to know who's leading those classes too.
Talking to the guys at Gradient who are running the 75 Sun Energy Racing cars, Kevin Magnussen has brought in the Cadillac Chip Ganassi car from the lead. That's Cadillac. Just talking to, as I say, the Gradient guys who are running the Sun Energy number 75 about what they're doing with drive time, and they were trying to get Kenny Abul, who is their full AM driver, through most of his drive time, and they soaked quite a lot of it, Shear, up in one or two of the yellow flag periods. And as I think it was Michael Waltrip who said to me at Le Mans when he was there with the Ferrari team a few years ago, when I was asking him how he was adapting to this form of racing, he says, there's two places where I'm just as good as everybody else, and that's when I've got my foot down the Mulsanne straight going flat out, and when the safety car is out. You don't gain any time in the safety car. It's brilliant. I've always remembered that from Michael Waltrip. He was very generous. But that's true, and good teams will work this out if they can see an opportunity to get some time soaked up under a race that has been neutralised. Then they're not gaining any ground, but neither are they losing any ground, and those minutes count. Doesn't count if you're sitting in the pit lane, but it does count if you're out behind the safety car under yellows.
No, you're spot on, John, and I've actually just looked up after race hour 11, so keep in mind this is a full hour and 20 minutes ago, Kenny Habul had not completed his driver time as of then. He had 3 hours and 55 minutes of track time, but not that additional 35 minutes that he needs to get to the 4.5 hour mark. So Kenny still owes us a little bit of time, assuming he has not been back in the Sun Energy One Mercedes, which I don't think I've seen his name on the timing screen for the last hour.
I will have a quick look at the 75 unofficially to see what the driver stint situation is. 3:58 and 6 seconds. That's unofficial. And the reason that Shea is talking about the printouts, because those are official and signed off by IMSA and Alcamel, the timekeepers, and they take account of in and out of pits and that sort of thing. So, but that's a good guide, Shea. So you're spot on. It looks like you need somewhere in the region of 35 minutes, which is a wee bit under one more stint for him in that car, I reckon.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But again, that can be served under a safety car, under anything. If we get the possibility of a long safety car, they could very easily eat that time up.
So we've got a couple of decent battles at the front of the field at just after 4 o'clock in the morning at Daytona. First and second, shall we call it half a second? It's barely that, a little bit more. It could be about to come down as they head into the braking area at turn one, through the trioval across the line now. And Ricky Taylor, who's taken over the black and blue number 10, has to go round a little bit of prototype traffic. That's always a tough one. Ricky has just got back in there, that car, whereas Mike Rockenfeller's been in the car that's chasing him down, the number 48 Ally Cadillac, for a wee while. So he's got his eyes in, really, you would say, in stick and ball sports, wouldn't you? Behind them, about another 30 seconds, Juan Montoya is in the purple and black Acura of Mayerschenk Racing with Kerb Agajanian, and he's got about a second on Felipe Nasser, who's been plugged back in to the number 31, the red and white Whelen Engineering Cadillac. So two good battles in the top four, and that top four all on the same lap, all on the lead lap. Let's call it 33 seconds between those cars. Three wide on the banking as Nasser is right up on the wall coming out of Speedway Turn 2. But he can see his prey ahead of him. And when you've got something to aim for, Nick Damon, that really does. It just make your heart get a little bit quicker. You can see where they're braking. You can work out where you perhaps are a little stronger. They're a little weaker. Wherever you are in your stint, do you decide to push harder, or as you were talking about before, do you sit in and save some fuel?
Shall we ask a driver, as we have Ian James on the line from the heart of racing team? Ian, did you hear that last bit? I mean, what is the tactics you go through the stint? Are you pushing? Are you holding back? What are you doing as you go along?
No, I think we're pushing flat out. I mean, it's so close there, and we're trying to stay on the lead lap, and there's so much jockeying and pit stops, and yeah, it seems like it's flat out every hour nowadays.
Yeah, we've talked to some of the luckier drivers who are in the faster cars. I mean, how difficult is it to drive consistently and steadily when you're perfectly looking in your mirror for something that's dive bombing you every corner?
Well, to be honest, we had a restart earlier on in the race, and we were like third or fourth in line, so then we had basically 45 cars trying to pass us, and it's pretty harrowing when you've got cars on both sides and you're trying to keep your own car on the track, that's for sure.
Apparently, you also had a bit of a whack with the number one Lamborghini earlier on. Is the car okay?
Yeah, we lost a little side fence on the diffuser, but I don't think that's going to hurt us too much. So, yeah, car's good, car's strong. It's not really set up for the night, so it's a little bit of a struggle in the bus stop, especially. But we're hopefully, when the temperatures come back up, we'll come back into tune, as it were.
That's really interesting, because we've been talking about the ebb and flow of the cars up front, the DPIs, as we've gone through the various change of temperature. Can you explain to the listeners, what do you mean by it's not set up for the dark? What have you done, and why have you done that? Which seems odd to make your car slower than it needs to be.
Well, it's really hard to change like the aero balance, and at night in the colder weather, it tends to go to a bit more of an understeery car, which hurts us in the bus stop in direction change. But as the temperature comes up, that goes away and it becomes more neutral and faster. And obviously that's at the end of the race, so it's harder for us to change the aero balance, whereas the DPIs and that, they can make a quick change. For us, we've kind of set with what we've got.
Ian, it's Hindhoff here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Thanks for being with us. What's the mood like in the Harter Racing team? You're a big fan favourite for as much for what you do off the track as what you do on it. How are you guys feeling right now?
Every time we get to come to the track, it's an honour, and we're having a blast. We take it seriously, but we enjoy our racing as well. So, we're pretty positive. We've been bouncing around in the top six most of the race, and we're ready for 4 hours to go. We'll see what we've got, hopefully.
Explain a little bit about Heart of Racing and what that means in terms of your activities away from the circuit with the team.
Yeah, the Heart of Racing is, it's a race program, but on the side of that, we raise money for pediatric cardiac research for kids in Seattle. And the Guild has raised over $7 million dollars to date, which has helped put a lot of machinery and stuff in Seattle Children's Hospital. So every time we're on the track, we're helping some of the kids a better chance going forward.
And just to finish off, great stuff, by the way, on that. It's something that we all support here on IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. I have to say, you guys are taking social distancing in the team to a whole new level, with literally some of your team members on the other side of the world at the moment. Give us some news on that situation.
Yeah, well, team patron Gabe Muir, he's in New Zealand. One of our teammates, Alex Riberas, is over there. Darren Kelly, So we have a racing program over there that they're pretty lucky with the COVID situation. So they're chilling in New Zealand, and we're racing in America, and I'm sure we'll be racing in many other countries in the near future.
Ian, I know how difficult it is to get in and out the track and get yourself prepared. So thanks for taking some time for talking with us. We wish you a clean run, race well, be safe.
Thanks, John, and thanks for all the work you guys do. We love hearing your voice.
It's our pleasure, literally it is. Ian James from Heart of Racing and the Aston Martin V8 Vantage. Darren Turner in that car at the moment, running a strong fourth position, about 40 seconds away from a podium position at the moment, chasing down actually that Sun Energy One Mercedes that we've been talking about, the number 75 car. Scott Dixon, fifth position now. Shea Adam, did I see a penalty being called for Scott Dixon in the 0-1?
You know when there are some penalties that are just so egregious, you put them on a bingo card because you think they'll never, ever, ever be called?
But really weird ones.
Yeah. Well, no. The ones that are just really flagrant that okay. You think, no one's going to go 25 kilometers an hour over the speed limit in the pit lane.
Excellent.
Yep. It elicited the 0-1 machine of Scott Dixon, a stop plus 20 penalty, which he has served. And now he's fighting his way back up. But that is a big, big miss over the limit. And methinks that's finger trouble coming out of where the pit lane limiter used to be, getting on the loud pedal and then remembering, oh, wait, I still have to go through the Michelin RFID readers. I'd better slip. Oops.
Yeah, explain about those, Shea. We have in past years, and actually it's often caused some issues getting out the pit lane because it's really very tight coming out the pit lane. You trace a tighter inside line through turn 10 and rejoin effectively in between turns 2 and 3, excuse me. And you used to be just at the entrance to that left-hand turn, but that was a bit dangerous for this new technology that Michelin have. These RFID chips means you don't have to have those markings on the side of the tyre. They automatically are read, so somewhere somebody's got a list of exactly how many tyres each car have used, so they had to move it. Why did they have to move it?
Basically to try and protect the equipment. Given the exit of the pit lane where it used to be, it was exposed straight to the track. And a few years ago, actually, we had cars crashing down through there, and they totally would have taken out those very expensive machines for Michelin. So they've decided to move them a little bit further down the pit lane, as Ray Ray is demonstrating. Thanks, Ray. Good to know you're up there. And put them in a much more protected area. It's a bit like when a hurricane's coming in, and you move all your stuff in from the patio because you don't want it to get blown around. That's what Michelin did. They moved it to a safer location. But yeah, you're spot on. The tire allocations for the weekend are set, and every single tire equipped with an RFID chip. So as soon as they drive out the reader, Michelin knows exactly who is on what tire and whether or not they've used that tire before.
Sounds like science fiction, doesn't it? And you might think that that's a great application of technology that's come out of racing. But actually, talking to our colleagues at Michelin, it came from tracking truck tyres, heavy goods vehicle tyres. It's been in that side of things for quite some time. Really important to know for the haulage companies around the world what their trucks are doing. And at their various depots, you can just scan them and quickly walk around. You don't even have to be able to do it in the daylight or anything like that because it's an RF radio frequency ID chip. And somebody, some bright spark said, hey, that could save us a load of work in motor racing. And I'm hearing from Michelin that street tyres will be getting the same kind of technology in the relatively near future for passenger cars, because there's some clever things that they can do with that in passenger car tyre technology. Always learning at Michelin. And they've been a great partner for motor racing down through the years. And every car, of course,
in this 59th running of the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona, running on a set of tyres with the smiling face of Bibendum on the side. It looks pretty good, actually, for well over 100 years old. I think he's lost a bit of weight recently. Rather than putting on the COVID-19, I think he may have taken them off. It's IMSA Radio around the track on 107.9 on Sirius XM. That's Sirius 216 XM 202. And, of course, around the world in sound and vision on imsaradio.com. And we welcome our US fans and audience to the visual part of our presentation as well, as we're on the night owl slot before we hand back to our colleagues at NBC for their run to the checkered flag. They're all getting a bit of shut eye at the moment and missing some fantastic racing, to be quite honest. So still just under 11 and a half hours to go, and Ricky Taylor leads by a second and a half from Mike Rockenfeller in the 48. 10 Acura from 48. Then that's the first, the Cadillacs, of course. Then the red and white Whelan 31 is another 27 seconds further back, and just 2 seconds ahead of Juan Montoya, who hasn't quite been able to close that gap. So first and second, 1.7 seconds. Third and fourth, 1.7 seconds. Then about 50 seconds back to Scott Dixon after that whoopsie and the comprehensive pit lane speeding that it was penalised. And he has got, with them coming across the line, 24 seconds on Jonathan Bomarito for Mazda Motorsport. They lost a lap early on. They actually had some trouble with Ollie Jarvis getting it out on the formation lap. Problem with first gear, but a quick bit of ones and zeros fired into the gearbox controller sorted that out. So they did take the start, albeit right at the back, lost a lap, then they failed to get that lap back with a bit of miscommunication on the radio, which Larry Holt of Multimatic was not very happy about. And then when they came in thinking they were going to get their lap back and another yellow, they found a problem with the rear section, the tail of the car, and that cost them extra laps. So they're sitting actually now 3 laps off the lead and 2 laps off the cars in front of them. Scott Dixon is the closest to them, as I said, by 24 seconds. Timothy Puret is behind the wheel of the Tower Motorsport Orica, which leads LMP2 from Roberto Lacorte for Chetilar Racing in the Dallara. The number 47 car is the Dallara meet in the Orica bread there, with Dragon Speed bracketing them and with Tower. And that's Chris Meese, the Audi GT driver in the number 82 car, getting some LMP2 experience. Then it's Ryan DL, who is a lap down, but trucking on for Aero Motorsport. What is it? 9:15 in the UK. So the UK waking up. And I saw that a number of the Scots were up early this morning. Exceptionally cold north of the border in the UK. Bit of snow up there. Duncan Vincent, I know, is tuned in and was cheering on Ryan, who said he'll be pushing on. RWR Eurasia, another lap further back in fifth position in the 51 Ligier. In GT Le Mans, it's Corvette. 2.5 seconds. That's about as much as they have been apart throughout the whole race. Alexander Sims and Nicky Katzberg in the 4 and the 3, so they have turned round again. It started off with the 4 and the 3, went to the 3 and the 4 for about 4 or 5 hours. Now it's back to the 4 and the 3, running in that order. 6.5 seconds further back, Jesse Kron in the number 24, the darker coloured BMW, almost a grey-black. Philip Eng is 15.5 seconds behind his teammate in fourth position, and only a second ahead of Alessandro Perghidi. So the red BMW team RLL number 24, the red 25 and the red 62 are in fact just a second apart. Obviously that's BMW and Ferrari. In LMP3, it's all started to break up a little bit. Riley Motorsport in the Ligier leads by 3 laps from Mulner Motorsport, who started on pole. Kenton Cook still behind the wheel of the 6, trying to make up some time on the 74, but the lap times are pretty much identical. Sean Creech Motorsport, Lance Wilsey behind the wheel of the 33 car in third, that's Alicia, and he's 90 seconds away from Kenton in second. In GTD, Indy Doncha leads for Winward Racing in the AMG GT3, that's the 57 car, on their debut in this category in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. They've been regular IMSA Pilot Challenge runners in the past with GT4 cars. EF Corsa and Ferrari number 21, Daniel Serra, is about 25 seconds further back. And then just over 30 seconds further back in third, in the third position, is the Sun Energy 1 Mercedes GT3 Lucas Stoltz that third spot in the car that's been run by Gradient. That's your Mazda in race update. And Nick Damon has this interview as part of our VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Report.
Yeah, and it's with great pleasure I welcome the Midweek Motorsport Person of the Year. It's Felipe Albuquerque. Felipe, great to have you on the show. Just give us an idea of how you feel being the Person of the Year of Midweek Motorsport as you were voted just recently.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty honored because I think you guys are in a great configuration, and I love your quality. Love your to be Personality of the Year, proven by you guys and the voters. So it means a lot because your public is the one that look the most on the in the race, and yeah, value for what I achieved last year. So thanks a lot to everyone that is listening and to you.
We're into 2021. This is the first big race. A very general question. How's it been going? First half of the race is done. The car is in contention, but then again, so is just about every other DPI. How do you feel the number 10's been running, with the Acura's been running?
Yeah, it's great, and it's a new chapter for me. I'm with Acura and Wayfarer Racing. Going on. It's interesting to see how they operate inside, and I've been for the last 5 years fighting them, and I've been able to be driving for them tonight, and actually now leading the race was good. The first half was okay, quite aggressive, everyone in the beginning, in the first three stints, kind of chaotic with LMP3s and a bunch of GTDs as well, so a lot of cars to deal with that, and so far I just only one moment where two cars spun, one guy on the outside and another one on the inside on P6, that I was avoiding one and nearly crashed the other one. but I guess it's part of the racing. It's never easy, and sometimes we can get caught in traps. And then this one now, we are just trying to survive the night. But even then, like the 48 was in my mirrors all the time and just trying to manage that. And we passed the hours for the NEC in first, which is good, but we just want the 24 hours win.
Philippe, it's Hindhoff here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Thanks for joining us. You are having that really great battle with the Cadillac. That's a car that you know very well. Does that help you to know where that car is strong, or better still, to know where your Acura now is stronger?
I think sometimes it's worse because I keep thinking where they are strong, and I want that. we always want what we don't have, right? And it does that in life and everything. But yeah, I could picture, because what my engineer Ian Watt is doing the engineering of that car, the 48. So I could imagine him on the wall, like, and I know him very well, we have a great relationship, and I know how he was thinking, and all the drivers, because Rockenfeller was with our team for 6 years in Audi, so I know him very well, a good friend, and we were having fun there, but Rocky as well knows me very well, and as well Ian, you know, Action Express, they know how I operate. It's good to know who are we fighting, because we know what to expect, and we know that both of us will do anything silly, and we want to be there. Obviously, I knew that Rocky, as soon as he had like a tactic, he would, but not serious. So that's good fun when we are like that.
I've got one more before I hand you back to Nick.
Of course.
Clearly, we've got just under half of this race still to go. We've been talking about getting to midday today and then the last 3 hours and 40 minutes. Part of that equation is having resources left at the end of the race. How have you guys been managing your tyre allocation? Have you been double stinting some of the Michelin tyres during the night, or have you been putting brand new cooled Michelins on at every fuel stop?
No. Since we start the night, we are doing two tires only, change, and then double stick the other one, the one off the side. So we are, like everyone, I believe, everyone is on the same strategy now, getting through the night, getting the tires ready for the last stint. So, we were taking care of it, and it was interesting to see who was on the... what they were doing in the tire degradation now, because I had to manage those tires. Obviously, I think I have quite a good experience with that, because in WEC and Le Mans, we have to double spin, sometimes triple spin the tires. So taking care of the long life of the tire helps a lot. And that's why I was not pushing sometimes so much, because I knew that I was going double spinning the tires on one side. And so to be fresh for you.
Seen during the course of the first few hours different cars in the DPI class being quicker at different times. I mean, how much non-tire related changes can you make at the stops? Are you doing small aero changes, or have you basically got a platform that's got to run all through the race?
Well, the BOP that we got doesn't allow us, not even from the beginning, to change nothing. I mean, we can change 0.2 percent of the car balance, so we don't have range to adjust the car. No, but at the moment we are happy about the car. But even then, to change anything on the car, you will lose a lot. You can eventually lose a lot. So no, we are not going to do anything. The car is good, thankfully, and it's just tires and fuel, driver change, and off we go to the end. Obviously, take care of the car, off the front. Through the bus stops, and to have the fastest car we can for the last when the day comes, and see how the balance is. Hopefully we get a little bit stronger, because at the beginning of the race the Cadillacs were a bit for the nice. Let's see if the rubber helps a little bit more our car than them. Let's see how it goes. But like you guys said, it's still 11 hours to go. What happening is the car number 5, that he was really, really quick, having problems. So let's see who's falling off until then.
Felipe, thanks very much, mate. Go and grab some sleep. Cheers, Felipe.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Philippe Albuquerque from the car that is leading at the moment. And that is the Ricky Taylor number 10 machine. Alexander Rossi and Elio Castroneves, the other two drivers. The Portuguese then in with the American crew. Shit, Adam.
Do my eyes deceive me, or does the 10, where its leader light should say number 1, say 10?
It's been like that for hours. It has been like that for hours. It was, I think, a couple of stints ago for me. But you're absolutely spot on. There's a few cars where the illuminated, the self-illuminated number panels aren't working. That's not so much of an issue here at Daytona. That would get you pulled in at Le Mans, because it's so dark out the back. The corner workers can't identify, or find it more difficult to identify the cars. They're very good. They know all the cars, but you know what I mean. To be absolutely certain. Particularly for video evidence nowadays, but that leader light number, which is just beside the number, is as you say, showing the number 10. Sean Creech Motorsport, the third place car in LMP3, is off the circuit, and that is turn one. Got it fired back up again, and it will continue. So Lance Wilsey who is behind that car. He gets back on in front of the 63 Ferrari, the Scuderia Corsa car. Let's do a couple of updates. Shea Adam has been making sure that the team contacts aren't getting any sleep either at the moment. What have you got, please?
Sorry, group chat, if I'm up, you're up. We have two cars of note that we need to talk about. The 42 NTE Audi of Alan Metney that we saw have the contact earlier on with the Wynn Auto Sport LMP2 car. Both cars are back out on track. Well, I say that, but Metney did just make a trip down the pit lane. That car was behind the wall and in the garage. They had to fix broken toe links, plural, because the steering was not functioning as it should have. Now the car back out, and it does seem to be turning left and right. So good news there. Metney's still behind the wheel of that Audi. And I'm sorry to report to Lamborghini fans, but both of the Grasser Lamborghinis from GRT have retired officially. The 111 car, which was wearing that number because Lamborghini has won the last 3 years in a row, that car was several laps down. They have finally retired it. We believe it is because of that plaguing electrical gremlin that they've been dealing with all week long.
Felipe Nasa into the pit lane in the number 31. That is another spot-on stint. That's going to be 22 laps when he rolls across. Oh, no, it's not, actually. It's a 20-lap stint for Felipe when he rolls across the start-finish line, which he will do any second now. The transponder, which he's just done, right in the middle of pit lane. So that makes that it 2-0 lap stint. That's his first since he took the car off from Chase Elliott round about a half an hour ago, a little bit more than that, about 32-33 minutes. The other car that you were did you do both of the updates there, GRT and NTE? Sorry, I was looking. Yes, you did, didn't you? Because you were talking
I did, but I have another Metney update, okay. Unfortunately.
I'm psychic.
Car 42 penalty, speeding on the pit lane, plus one has elicited that car another drive-through. And we've got a car stopped on track at turn two. Maybe Ray Ray can spot this. We've got the 48 in the pit lane. That's Mike Rockenfeller. New boots for him. He is not getting out of that Ally Cadillac as they are doing fuel and tires. So that's a very good spot by that pit box. The Action Express crew who is fielding that car, very, very nifty at this sort of thing. And they do have a nose for when a car might be causing an issue. And it is, in fact, car number 7, which is the LMP3 machine of 47 Motorsports. It is stopped on course. Let's see if I can find it on timing and scoring. I'll let you know if it makes it back around into the pit lane. But Mark Valme took it out of the pits quite some time ago now, 15 minutes.
Spot on 22 laps for Mike Rockenfeller. And this will be the start of his third stint. If you're watching timing and scoring and wonder why Scott Dixon's made an extra pit stop, don't forget he had blown through the speed limit and therefore had to come in for not just a drive through, it was a stop and hold, and that's what's pushed the number 01 Cadillac down. He'll be in a couple of three laps time, as will in fact the leader, Ricky Taylor. Oh, in fact, as I say that, Nick Damon, pit stop for the Konica Minolta Acura.
As if by magic, you almost like you conjured the car up there, John, isn't it? Yeah, so it's a full service, no driver change, so fuel, four tyres, drink bottles, nothing else going awry. They're not having to fill any fluids at the moment, as the Acura, which is rotating for the lead with a number of the Cadillacs. So interesting, one Montoya in the 60 Meyer Shank Racing Acura is also now up there. So we're seeing a kind of a coming together of those top five cars, the three Cadillacs and the two Acuras, with the noticeable left behinds being the Mazda, the 55 car that's never really got going after having gearbox issues right at the start, and of course the Mustang sampling Cadillac that's had some problems and lost about four laps. As in comes Juan Pablo.
Shea Adam is watching this one.
This is fuel and tires. Juan Pablo Montoya not getting out of the Meyer Shank Racing Acura that he's very used to driving. Last year it bore the number 6. This year it bears the number 60. And when it bore the number 6 the year before, actually 2 years before, he and Dane Cameron, sharing the car full season, drove it to a championship victory. They're now at about 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and go. There we go. Full load of fuel in that Acura. I love when Montoya listens to me. This kind of power I could get used to.
Yeah, into the acceleration lane. Hello to Marcus Miller. He's tuned in. David. David, who his Twitter handle is DavidAMG, but is in Vysak, which is the home of Porsche Motorsport. Hello, David. How do you make the BOP for these cars? What can be changed to bring the cars onto the level playing field? It's a very good question. IMSA have a technical department with computing power that would rival NASA, to be honest. And they collect an inordinate amount of data from the cars. So last week at the Raw, for example, David, they were taking data sticks, effectively, out of the cars here at fairly regular intervals. And there's actually quite large penalties for people who don't turn in their data stick within a requisite amount of time.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting principle what IMSA has set up. Every four times a race, so every 6 hours in effect, you have to take the data stick out of your car, take it to IMSA within 15 minutes of removing it from the car. They do that so that you don't fiddle with anything. You don't plug it into your computer and change what the data coming out of the car said, which you can do if you're smart enough with computer programs and manipulating that sort of thing. So they've made it so that you have to change your data stick between hour 5 and 7, i.e. within the first 6 hours, hour 11 and 13 halfway through the race, and then hour 17 through 19, I think, was the other one. So they give you those opportunities. And then, of course, when the car goes into Parc Fermé after the race, IMSA themselves will remove the data stick, or your team manager can pull it out and bring it to IMSA. But once again, within the set period. If you don't do that, it can result in disqualification.
Yeah.
During a session, if you miss it after a practice session, they hold you in the pits for 5 minutes of the next session, which tends to be about 12% of the session. So they are quite big penalties for messing around with data sticks.
And then all that data, as you say, data, is taking up to the Charlotte Technical Centre. The numbers are crunched, including from some sensors that are independent of the car manufacturer's sensor. So it's not just like the team says, oh yeah, we could give you throttle position, yeah, that just comes off here, and you know, we doesn't always just work like that all through the pit. Come on.
A professional race team would gain a sensor that would never happen, certainly not by the biggest racing team in the world, that's for sure.
Maranello. Yes. But they don't do it because they have independent sensors here. In comes the 01, by the way. And as far, Dave, as what could they use to do it? Fuel, tank size, you can have restrictors. We've seen in the past even gear ratios being changed by IMSA. They've been working very hard on these DPIs down through the years. And they seem to have got things pretty good. They're going to have to start all over again, of course, with the new iteration in 2023 and with the added complication of hybrid power. Well, at least it's going to be a spec hybrid system, so that at least will take out one of the variables. Quick update on that stop there, Shea Adam. What was going on in the pit lane?
It was fuel, tires, windshield clean. Chip Ganassi's boys and girls, very adept at doing pit stops in the car. As a matter of fact, was only stopped in the box for a total of 31 seconds. Scott Dixon now back out onto the racetrack. And the reason that I say 31 seconds being relevant the maximum amount of fuel that it takes from an empty tank to a full tank in a DPI car is a 30-second fuel drop. So that means that the car was either almost empty and they filled it up perfectly, or no, we'll just give it to Chip Ganassi Racing. We'll leave it with that.
Yeah, okay. 55, Jonathan Bomarito will be next to the DPIs in at the end of the lap that it's on. So before that happens, let's give you a quick rundown of what's going on as we're coming to the end of the 13th race hour, starting GTD this time, for the mere reason that that's where I happen to be looking on the timing screen for something else. Indy Dodgy leads for Winwood Racing, and Mercedes AMG GT 357 has 20 seconds on EF Corsa, and that's the Ferrari number 21 with Daniel Serra. Lucas Stoltz still holds on to third place ahead of Darren Turner, but there's nearly a minute between those two, and then 12 seconds back to Brian Sellers for Paul Miller Racing in the number one Lamborghini, the top six made up by Wright Motorsport, struggling with that out of kilter left rear wheel that Pat Long was telling us about early on. It's Trent Hindman behind the wheel there. In LMP3, it is Riley from Mulner, but there's three laps between those, and then even with that little half spin a few moments ago for Lance Wilsey in the 33 Sean Creech Motorsport car, he still holds on to third position in class. In GT Le Mans, Alexander Sims from Corvette Racing leads Nicky Katzberg from Corvette Racing by all of 3 seconds, four from three. They are being caught, however. That is a battle. We'll take a look at that in a wee moment. Half a second between Corvette number three and Jesse Kron in the 24, the dark grey stroke black BMW. Alessandro Perghidi is another 18 seconds further back in fourth position for Risi Competizione. In LMP2, seventh overall now for Tower Motorsport, with 43 seconds of a lead from their number 8 car, driven by Timothy Biret, to the number 47 Chatelard Racing Dallara, with Roberto Lecourt in the driving seat. And he has got quite a distance actually at the moment, showing us a full lap on Fabian Schiller for Dragon Speed in third position. At the top of the shop, it's Ricky Taylor by 21 seconds from Mike Rockenfeller for Allied Cadillac Racing, 10 from 48, Acura from Cadillac, then another 17 seconds back to third Felipe Nasr in the 31 Cadillac. Juan Montoya now 8 seconds further back in fourth place in the number 60, the blue and black car, the purple and black car. It's got Dixon in that sort of chalk coloured Chip Ganassi Cadillac. The 01 car is in fifth position, but another 47 seconds back. That's how it stands. And we've got a problem out on the racetrack. That was Nico Lapierre that's just left the pit in that 52 wins sponsored machine, and he's had contact. That was your Mazda in race update, and we've just gone through another race hour. The next 60 minutes of racing starts right now.